On today's Kick to Kick podcast, we delve into the 1900 season. We take a look at our mailbag, and we have a very special guest on the show to talk us through some more recent history. Our question of the day tackles the most embarrassing thing we have said or done at the football. We give you some history from the turn of the century, and we take a good hard look at the 1900 season, riding the highs and the lows of all the teams. And finally, the showdown you've been waiting for. In the white corner, Henry Ivo Crapp. In the black and white corner, Dick Condon. Kaz will fill us in. All this and more coming up after the song.
It's the history of football we knows about, and we want to expand what we know. We'll become such intelligent gentry with every Kick to Kick show. Beginning in the time 1870, right through to the modern day. Tune in for Timmy Coops and the Kazman to hear what they all have to say.
Yes, and welcome to another episode of Kick to Kick. My name is Tim, and to my right, making his triumphant return from injury, Coops.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good to be back.
After your one show, missed one show.
Flew over to Germany for a quick fix-up and feeling good now.
Nice. To my left is the Kazman.
Hi, welcome back, Charlie.
Always there, always reliable.
Always there.
And our special guest today, the Rose Between Two Thorns, Sandy. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Great to be here.
Excellent. Now, before we get to Sandy and ask her our usual questions, we're going to check in quickly with our mailbag, which is mostly empty today. The one piece we did have, though...
I can't find it.
I can edit this out.
I believe your question was something along the lines of what we decided to name the...
Sorry. It's all right. Oh, I found it.
That's it. We can just restart it like that.
There was a question asking whether we had decided on a name for where we record. And have we, is the question.
We had not yet.
My personal favourite is the Kick Cave.
The Kick Cave?
The Kick Cave, I like it.
Yeah. Well, just rolls off the tongue.
The Kick Cauldron.
The Kick Cauldron.
Oh, yes, cooking up something good.
That's not bad. I had the Melbourne Kick It Ground, but
it's
a bit wordy. Mm. It's a bit wordy.
Kicky I do had, love a pun, though. Yeah. Who doesn't?
That's right. Was it Kicky Had Stadium?
The Kicky Had Stadium, the Fortress of Kicktitude, and the Kicky Mart was my other one.
I think we might need another week just to another really week. Boil it down.
All right, well, we'll just tell that person who wrote in.
It's still pending,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, still pending, Charlie. All right, we'll get to Sandy. So, Sandy, we ask these questions to all our guests just to get a bit of a gauge for their football knowledge and passion, I guess.
Ooh,
who do you support and what is the story behind that?
So I'm a very passionate Melbourne Football Club supporter. I don't think I really had any choice in the matter, to be honest. All my family are pretty staunch Melbourne supporters.
Classic demons.
Yeah, classic demons.
No choice.
No choice.
Died in the wool.
Absolutely. So my dad probably started off for everyone. He migrated out here from Northern Italy in 1952 when he was really small. He started going to St. Patrick's and lived on Brunswick Street in Fitzroy. And I'm thankful he didn't choose the route that many kind of migrants took, which was barracking for either Carlton or Collingwood.
I was going to say, yeah.
He used to go to St. Pat's to school, so he'd often do all his sports around the MCG in Yarra Park, around the grounds there. He'd do all his, athletics carnival, that kind of stuff, and he would just see the D's training. And he just jumped on board, and I think they were going quite well then as well. So.
Why wouldn't he have, eh?
Yeah. And so he sort of started it, and that trickled down with his younger brother, and then, my brother, sister and I, and all our families. So, yeah.
It makes sense. I think, having more than one team in a family just creates rifts.
Oh, absolutely.
You don't need it. Don't need to throw that in the mix. There's already enough going on.
No, absolutely.
You want to be able to go to the footy together.
I couldn't even be married to someone who didn't go for my team.
No, so you lucked out.
Awkward. I know, I did luck out,
And we only found out that he chose the Demons, Kaz chose the Demons when he was 18.
Yeah.
So that was kind of lucky.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Mm.
Do you guys know each other then?
No.
It could have been over before.
It could have. Yeah,
absolutely. I just couldn't do it, being in the same house with someone that I couldn't cope. Anyway.
So as a kid then, what number did you have on your jumper?
I had number 13 for Alan Jakovic on the back of my jumper. So he, you know, he's a character of the game. Yeah. And as a kid, you know, someone that did handstands after a goal. And
did he?
And the theatrics that he used to do.
I remember him kissing his brother.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, he was great.
Because his mum was there that game. He was saying that recent interview. Yeah.
Nice. Mm. How loving. Best Demons game you've been to?
I would have to say the Melbourne versus North Melbourne prelim in 2000 that got us into the grand final.
Yeah.
I think that was... I mean, obviously we got into the grand final and that had been a long time coming. But, yeah, just... Yeah, when that final siren went, that was pretty electric.
Knowing that you were in the grand final.
Yeah, knowing you were in the grand final was all a bit surreal. Yeah. And I remember even the trip home, just there was that many renditions of Grand Old Flag going on, getting out of the G, and it was just constant, just over and over. So, yeah, that's probably the best game, best Melbourne game I've been to probably, because it meant we got in the grand final.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that whole week, because then Woe Woden won the Brownlow, so that whole lead up until the final, the first bounce, must have been just electric for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And then very foreign as well.
And then the first bounce went, and Michael Long took out Troy Simmons, and I was like, oh, it's over now.
Yeah,
it's done.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Well, best game you've been to overall?
That's hard.
We struggle with that question.
Yeah, it's really hard. And this might be a little strange, but I think it was probably maybe, I don't know if it was 2014 or 2015, when we weren't doing particularly well. And it was a Melbourne-Brisbane game. And we may have only won four for the year that year. But I just remember this night game, this Melbourne-Brisbane game. And there was probably 20,000 people at the G, if you were lucky. It was one of those ones. Cold, freezing, rainy night. But we just came out of nowhere and we absolutely flogged them. And it was just like we had actually won a grand final that night. There, people were hugging other supporters. There were people high-fiving and cheering. People hanging off the rafters. Like, it was amazing. So that was honestly one of the best games I've ever been to, even though it wasn't a particularly stellar season or anything like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's those ones where, you know, there's not many people around and where you're like, I'm a real supporter.
I deserve
this. No one else saw it. I was
but
there.
But we so desperately needed a win and we got it. You were there, Kaz, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you were
the roar was like there was 90,000 people there. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was best.
Awesome.
It was pretty good.
All right, well, that gets us to our question of the day. And today's question of the day was the most embarrassing thing you have said or done at the football. Now, I made this a question because I knew you were coming on, Sandy, so I know you've got some good stories for us, but we might start with Coops. If you've got one.
Yes, I've got many, but one sticks out in my mind. It was... extremely embarrassing. I flew up to Darwin with a few mates to see us play Port Adelaide up there. I'm trying to remember what year it was. It was the year just before Tom Scully went to GWS.
It's like his 1 year at Melbourne.
1 year? Two.
Was it? Okay.
I can't remember. One.
I can't remember either.
Well, yeah, I've blocked that from my memory.
I think two.
I think two. Yeah, because, you signed. So,
yeah.
And we was there. It was at... TIO Stadium, so, you know, great atmosphere. You know, everyone's just standing on the fence, and it was a night game, and we'd been at the pub since about midday, and we were getting a little bit lippy, and then there were a bunch of Port Adelaide supporters behind us, and we were winning, and they were getting really annoyed, and they're going, you're not going to be able to do this next year because Tom Scully's not going to be there, and, you know, really trying to wind us up. And the final siren went... and we'd won only just. And so I jumped the fence and I was running out into the middle of the ground and I turned around and made some very lewd gestures at these guys while going, Tom Scully! And then just ran off. And I thought it was hilarious. My friends thought it was hilarious. The guys did not. So I just disappeared into the ground after that.
Classic.
And the luxury of being able to run onto the ground as well.
Yeah, it was great.
Absolutely, without a $7,000 fine.
Yeah.
Kazman, do you have any from your time umpiring maybe?
Yeah, I did think of one when I was umpiring. I suppose it was probably something that umpires perhaps have actually said before, but it was my first foray into a bit of umpire-player backchat, a bit of discourse there. Now, my thing that that couple of rounds was the runners, because they were spending a long time in the forward 50, and being in Division 2, you noticed that they were really there a lot longer than, say, Division 1.
You have to keep an eye on that thing as an umpire. You got to watch the runners as well.
Yeah, I just feel like they get in the way sometimes, and I usually just call out, get out of the 50 or something like that, and they usually go pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But this guy from, it was a King Lake game, and I yelled at him a few times, and he just sort of wasn't, you know, responding. So I got my steam up and I said, it's like you're trying to get a kick. And
coming from an umpire.
And,
yeah.
And then he eyeballed me and I could see him waving his arms from the, you know, I was in the center and he was over in the 50, and I knew that I'd the message was received. I don't know whether it was appreciated or not. And then when the siren went, the captains came racing up to me and was in my face. Fair enough, because you know, the runner had gone back to him and was pretty upset, because he actually was a player. Just, he was doing the running that day. And I don't know the rest of the story, but yeah, the captain was pretty pissed off at me. He's an absolutely genuinely nice guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, not so happy. It wasn't great.
Heckling. Umpire shouldn't be heckling.
You know, umpire, you shouldn't say anything, mate, that sort of thing. And I'm like, yeah, fair enough. But, you know, I had asked him. And I don't know. Jury's out on... I probably shouldn't have said that.
Oh, well. Mine is also relating to not being in a game of AFL, but actually playing the game myself.
Yeah.
So I was captain of my school...
Didn't know you played AFL, Skipper. Tim.
I didn't play AFL. playing football, playing Australian rules football.
Pick him up. Yeah, good.
So I was captain of my school's second team, and it was my very last game. Very last game for like 15 years before I decided to pull on the boots again. So very last game at home in front of our home crowd, and we were at the door, and as the captain, it was my job to rev everyone up and get them all ready for the game and psych them up, you know, pat them on the head and tell them everything they needed to hear to be ready to go at that first bounce.
You'd be good at that.
Bit of intimidation from the other team as well. I did it to them, like holding them, like kind of holding onto the door so they couldn't come out, like trying to get them to fever pitch. I turned around to start running down the race and I tripped over on the race and fell ass over. After I'd given this big intimidating speech to try and rev them up, I'm just like, oh God. Sit up and just tried to ignore what had actually happened, but bloody hell, it was embarrassing. Especially as captain, it was bloody embarrassing.
I love it.
And we didn't win that game.
Moments in football that we love can be quite painful.
Which brings us to Sandy.
Oh, I thought we might have
couldn't forget you.
She may or may not for this reason.
No, I've been going to the football for longer than I can remember. So I've seen a lot and been part of a lot. And mostly, look, being a Melbourne supporter, I sit with Melbourne people, so it's generally pretty tame, to be fair, and everyone's pretty positive.
Where's this going?
There was a game, or maybe 2006 or so, the Melbourne-Richmond game. It was a night game and I was there with my sister and nephews, and Kaz actually even was there. And it probably wasn't my finest moment, but we'd gotten to the... We got to the G a bit late because we struggled. I think we'd driven in and we struggled getting a park. And anyway, we kind of just went straight in where we could find, which was behind the Richmond cheer squad, which is probably the first mistake, to be fair. Yeah. And look, we were getting flogged and that was fine, and we were just sitting there, and my sister turned to me, I think maybe at the end of the first quarter, and she just whispered to me and said, oh gee, the Tigers supporters are really more feral than Collingwood, aren't they? Like Collingwood supporters. And this woman behind heard and just arced up straight away and was at us. And I was like, okay, like, you know, she didn't mean it. Just settle down. It's fine, whatever.
Yeah.
She was quite aggressive about it, though. And she went on and on for probably the second quarter and just kept being quite offensive. And I kind of have like a tolerance level and then I snap. It sort of doesn't just, that's just what happens. And I just turned to her and I said, look, you've had your say. We get it. You know, she apologized. My sister apologized to her. Like, it's fine. Let it go now. We're all here to enjoy the game. Let it go. Move on. She just kept at it again. So then I snapped and just turned to her and I was like, you know, I probably said a few other words in there as well, but I was like, if you're going to continue, I'm just going to put this fist in your face. Like, I just have, I can't, you've spent the first, like,
I'm
the best part of
a... fist in your
face.
Yeah,
and she really calmed down because I probably got up in her face a bit and was quite aggressive because I did snap.
Yeah.
I'm not a violent person. I've actually never punched anyone, but yeah. I'd like hit tipping point. And then she stopped and she was completely quiet and it was great. And I thought, oh, good, she got the message. She must have thought I was serious. And then we were getting
flogged.
So
we can leave the story there? That's where it left.
Don't censor her, Kaz.
We left it a little early because we were getting flogged and it wasn't very enjoyable. And as we got... Kaz's face. As we got up to leave, she said this horrible comment, you know, swore at us and, you know, just a cheap shot. And as I was walking up the steps, I turned around. And it wasn't my finest moment, but I had a half full bottle of Lipton green iced tea in my hand and I just piffed it at her and it hit her smack bang in the face. So
wait,
good
don't
aim.
You mean it accidentally fell out of your hand?
Slipped. Oh, yes, of course. It slipped out. Yeah. I obviously meant to have a drink and then it slipped out. No, I actually meant it for her because I was like, this is ridiculous. And then I had my nephews in either hand and I said, okay, boys, let's run. And out we went. And I just remember almost getting out of the G and feeling this hand at the back of my hair pull my neck back, and it was some other woman trying to have a go. And then we got out. And I turned around and half of the Richmond cheer squad was chasing us. I'm not even joking. And so my sister took the kids and we split and it was every man for himself. So I remember seeing Kaz at one point in the middle of probably 8 or 10 guys, like, you know, toothless, kind of rough looking blokes. And they were just pushing him. And I thought, oh, he's just going to get murdered here. Like, what have I done?
This is the end,
yeah. And I was, I couldn't help him. I was fighting my own battles. Yeah. He had his backpack went one way, his glasses went the other way. But, you know, we were the ones left standing at the end. So it was very interesting. It was a very interesting experience. I certainly wouldn't do it again. But I find that the Richmond cheer squad supporters have a very big mob mentality when it comes to that kind of thing.
Cheer squads in general.
Yeah. Every cheer squad is special in their own way. Yeah, they are. Strange. But it was interesting. So it really escalated quite quickly.
If only we had her hiding in one of these rooms.
I
to
know.
Come out now.
It's special.
It'd be like a reunion.
Yeah.
Strange, you know.
Yeah, so not my finest moment. That's the worst. It's the most extreme.
Yeah.
Lipton iced tea Lipton starting a fight. Yeah. When, you know, it's supposed to be nice, calming.
I didn't know Melbourne supporters got that angry.
Well, you know, we don't have that reputation, do we? But I think it's good to show a bit of aggression every now and again. Just, you know, I bet one thing, that woman would never have done that again in her life to anyone else at a game. So, look, I just did a public service, probably. To be fair.
Nice. Now, the other thing I forgot to mention earlier, or ask you earlier, was that you were actually at the AGM that Melbourne had with Hawthorn to discuss the merger in 96.
I think I was maybe 10 or 11.
You got dragged along or you wanted
to go? I went along with my dad.
Yeah.
I don't remember a lot from it, but there was a lot of obviously heated speeches and Joseph Kutnick was there. And I do remember going to the next game that weekend and we were all given these big paper signs like no merger or something like that. And
did you have your Alan Jakovich jumper on at the moment?
Probably. Yeah. Or my badges on my scarf. Probably, yeah. But yeah, I don't remember a great deal from it except a heap of sort of passionate speeches, but I couldn't tell you what they said.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. All there that night. Imagine the feeling.
Because they had like the jumper design and they had the song written. Like everything was kind of ready to go, wasn't it?
Yeah. Mm. It would have been one of the biggest tragedies, I think. Yeah. But I know I'm a Melbourne supporter, so probably I can say that. But as the oldest club.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Look where we are now.
But, and look at both clubs now.
Yeah, I mean, completely.
Yeah. I mean, between us, we've won, what, 5 premierships?
Since that merger meeting.
Yeah. It's been amazing.
Yeah.
It's been great.
Yeah.
No, it's an... it would have been an amazing thing. I sort of don't really remember it, which is strange because... Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, a lot of people at school being like, you'll be called the dorks and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
Classic gag.
Yeah.
And I think my mum's side of the family, all her brothers were Fitzroy supporters.
Yeah.
So I'd sort of already been kind of exposed to that merging element in terms of them with Brisbane and all that sort of stuff. And so I was like, I just don't want to support. I remember thinking at the time, if that happens, I think I'm just going to be done with football.
Yeah.
I can't support another team. No. It's not the same.
No, no.
So I'm so glad. I don't know whether that would have happened.
Yeah,
I
that was echoed by Murph, our other guest,
yeah,
the other day.
Two episodes ago, he was talking about the exact same thing, like having to kind of be in the wilderness for a while, not having a team.
Yeah, it would be really quite strange. So, yeah. But can I just say, because I need to redeem myself from this bad story I said earlier. No, no. But the thing is, I feel like all that banter and stuff, it's all a bit part and parcel of football, isn't it?
Yeah.
But more than anything, this is what I love about footy, and I don't know if you guys have been over this or not yet, probably not, but I love the way it just brings people together, just random people that you probably wouldn't ordinarily get, just brings them together, and I love that. I remember actually...
Hugging random people.
Yeah, I'm all about
unbelievable.
It. Yeah, absolutely. I think sport in general does that, but I think there's something special about AFL.
Well, you look at American, like, sorry, European football, like soccer.
Oh, totally
the
different.
Fans can't sit next to each other. They're all segregated.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's a whole different... Yeah, thing. I think the banter between between fans of different clubs makes it to another level as well. It's great
absolutely.
Just having a bit of, you know, bit of chat.
Yeah.
And, you know, just lipping away at each other.
And it's funny the things you remember as well. I remember in the 2000 Grand Final, so the Melbourne Essendon Grand Final, it had gotten to three-quarter time. And it was obvious we, you know, very unlikely that we were going to win. And I just remember, I think I was 16, I just remember crying because I was like, I just wanted it so bad.
Yeah.
And this guy behind me, he just tapped me on the shoulder and put his arm on my shoulder and he said, march on, soldier, march on. And it's like the most naff thing and so corny.
Yeah.
But honestly, even now, you know, 17 years later, when like something hard happens, his voice
march
just pops
on.
Into my head, and I'm like, "Yeah, march on, soldier." It's funny the stuff that sticks with
sticks
you as well.
That's
like,
great.
Yeah, I suppose the Doggies and the Tigers in the last few years gives you hope as well that
completely
these droughts can be broken.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Our time is coming.
Right. Oh, it's on the way.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Give us some history.
All right. So the year 1900.
Year,
firstly, what we do, Sandy, is we like to just put a bit of context into what's happening around the world at this sort of this time of year before we get stuck
love
into the season itself. So things that happened in the year 1900. Do you know anything that happened in the year 1900?
No, you've got me on the spot. Can't think of anything off the top of my head. No.
Beginning of the 21st century.
Yes,
I did make some mistakes in the last episode. The beginning of the 20th century.
Yes.
I did. I made two mistakes in the last episode. I've been reminded of that. The 20th century... 20th century.
Yeah.
All right, so the Second Boer War was continuing.
Yes. Yeah, there were a few interesting things about the Boer War in there, but it was still going on. And it didn't finish that year either.
No, but there were some big victories that kind of were keys in it.
In it all.
Kind of coming to a close.
Yeah. The ones that I had... Well, do you have those?
I've got some.
Those?
Let's just go through them.
Oh, okay. On the 2nd of January 1900, the US Secretary of State... announced the open door policy to promote American trade with China.
Ooh.
That door's
topical.
Only just being closed now.
closing?
The first modern submarine was designed and built.
Oh, there you go.
In 1900.
Wow.
Yeah.
On February 5th, the UK and the US signed a treaty for the building of a Central American shipping canal across Central America.
Hey.
Oh.
Panama Canal.
Didn't that change things?
Yeah.
It did.
Oh, wow.
Absolutely.
No.
The Davis Cup tennis trophy was founded in the first Davis Cup tennis
another
tournament.
Sporting fact.
Happened, yeah.
Still newer than the footy, but you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And another sporting one was Bayern Munich, the German football club, was founded in 1900.
Youngins.
Yeah, youngins.
Yeah.
Mm.
The second modern Olympics happened in Paris that year. And get this, they lasted for 5 months.
The Olympics.
The Paris Olympics in 1900 lasted for 5 months.
That's almost half a year.
That's a party.
Isn't it?
That's crazy.
How long are they now? Two and a half weeks?
Yeah.
3 weeks?
Yeah.
Is that because there was one really long event?
I don't know.
Or they stacked them next to each other.
Yeah.
Or something? I don't know.
Maybe they did each event individually, so it was just the focus on that sport.
Everyone had to compete in everything.
There was also a total solar eclipse that year.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I've got the premiere of Tosca.
Puccini's
opera.
Puccini's opera.
I like that one. A couple of good songs there.
The British Labour Party was officially established as well in that year.
Yeah. On July 9th, the British House of Commons passed the bill that would allow Australia to federate.
Oh, good on them.
And the Commonwealth was proclaimed on September 7th, but wouldn't come into effect until the following January.
Oh, so we've still got a player of the colonies.
We do. Our last player of the colonies. I don't know what we're going to call it after this.
Well, yeah. I had the idea that we could call it Player of the Commonwealth. Even bigger.
No, yeah. Just keep on growing.
That's right.
Also, Puffing Billy Railway in Victoria was open for traffic.
Yeah. The narrow gauge engine for all the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
for all those train nerds out there.
That's right. Now, I heard something about the Reichstag approves the second law that allows the expansion of the Imperial German Navy. And we all know where that leads.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of notable Australians. We've got Lorimer Dodds, and he was a medical pioneer. So this is an Australian. He was Father of the Year, and he was a knighted paediatrician. Hey. Quite an up-there paediatrician. As well as there was Alice Berry, who was a notable Australian born at that time, who became head of the CWA, but notable because she helped lots of rural women and children. So so I thought that was cool to find some Australians in that.
A couple of other Australians were also born in that year. John McEwen, who was the 18th Prime Minister of Australia, was born in 1900, as was Bill Ponsford, the Australian cricketer. Yes. And Spencer Tracy, the American actor, was also born that year.
Oh, I actually recognise that one. There's a lot of actors I couldn't...
I know. There's huge lists of people. Yep.
The composer I definitely noticed was Aaron Copland, famous American. Fantastic composer. Born...
Hit song of 1900 was Mataiga Lily by Arthur Collins.
No, I listened to that. It's a ragtime song, but it just doesn't have the same as last year's one.
Yeah.
So, anyway, can't even whistle it.
All right, you got anything?
I do have one.
Yeah, what do you got?
A large standing stone at Stonehenge actually fell over.
Yeah.
And it's the most recent time this has happened.
Oh, wow.
Apparently hasn't happened since.
They've all been standing strong since.
Since December 31st, 1900.
That's a rare occurrence.
Wow.
Yeah.
December 31st.
Yeah. The aliens just scraped in.
But on New Year's Eve as well, that's spooky.
Isn't it?
They knew.
And the first Zeppelin flight was carried out. Sorry.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
The first Zeppelin flight designed by Mr. Zeppelin.
Led. I wonder. I wonder how long it is until that famous Zeppelin disaster.
Yeah, I think just before the war, possibly. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure we'll come to that in our own world history. Yeah.
I like this section. Later on.
It's really interesting. Yeah. I like it.
All right. Well, that gets us to the season proper of 1900. So we'll do it like we did last episode. Charlie, you weren't here, but we're going through from ladder position, so 8th to 1st.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
So we're mixing it up a little bit. So we'll start with St Kilda again.
Of course.
But let's get the celebrations going, because, hey, guys, they won a game.
Yeah, they did.
The Saints.
No.
Just the one?
They won. Just the one.
Oh, well.
So, did they, though?
Well, yes.
Against who, Tim?
So round one.
Did they?
Round one, St Kilda. 10 goals, 8, 68, defeated Melbourne, 9 goals, 13, 67. Oh. It's a one-point game, but...
But it was... It ended in a draw.
It did.
And the result was changed after a protest because the umpire didn't signal the end of the third quarter in the correct fashion after hearing the bell.
So I think a Melbourne player marked it after the siren.
Yeah.
And had a shot for goal.
Because he hadn't already done it.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. So...
So it took them... What I read was 4 days to actually make that decision.
Four days.
So quicker than it takes them now.
Correct.
But, I mean, St Kilda winning their first game, but they've got to wait. Like, they can't celebrate there on the ground.
No.
Although, I guess just not to lose would be a good thing for
them. Yeah, really.
So
yeah, they would have been stoked with a draw.
Yeah, it said it sparked jubilation.
It would. interestingly enough, the only other time that's happened was St Kilda Fremantle, if you remember Siren Gate.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only other time that it's happened.
Yeah.
Both St Kilda. And it was Matthew Nichols was the umpire who was in control, and he just said he couldn't hear it. They've said that the siren was too soft.
Yeah.
Yeah, the crowd was just... Because he spoke about this at training once, and it was just...
With you?
The crowd was just really loud, you know, and it's a little bit of a different ground where they're all there, and he just couldn't hear it.
Yeah.
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 So it was good to see St Kilda break their 48-game losing streak.
Well, it was actually a 51-game losing streak because they lost the last three in the 1896 VFA season as well.
All right. But if we look like... They'd get rid of that because that wasn't VFA. Yeah. One thing I forgot to read out last season was... In the last episode was against Geelong, in the 1899 season, the overall score for the three times they played would have been Geelong 51 goals 53, 359 to St Kilda 3 goals 16-34.
Oh,
that
God.
Was the accumulative score against Geelong. Wow. That's ridiculous. But yeah, great to see that they had a win. They actually had a new captain as well. It was Cecil Sanford, who had been recruited from Geelong.
So they would have been thinking, oh, there you go.
Well, his experience made him immediately appointed captain. And he got them a win in their first game.
There you
so,
go.
You know, pretty good strike rate as captain
he
to
got
start
straight
with.
Straight in there, yeah.
Straight in there.
Yep. Also, no, after you.
nothing else I could really... There's a little bit about from the finals that I'll talk about with St Kilda, but we'll get to that.
There's another little fun... Well, it's not fun for St Kilda supporters,
oh,
but
no.
A little fun fact. By the end of the finals in 1900, the round robin matches, more than 1,000 points had been scored against St Kilda in
that
single
season.
Season.
Yeah. Yeah, I did see
it's
that
not
too.
A great time.
No. What?
But and also an interesting fact was there was a player for St Kilda, Dave Strickland, who only played one game for St Kilda. I think it was in round. Oh, I'll come back to that. But he only played a single game. But that year, he won the stall gift in 12 seconds off a handicap of 10 years, just like 10 years. Basically exactly the same time and handicap as George Stuckey, who won it 2 years previous.
Mm. 3 years previous.
The first year, 1897. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. The reason that's interesting, though, he obviously wasn't an excellent footballer, having only played one game, but he was the father of Shirley Strickland, who became Shirley Delahunty, who won 3 gold medals for Australia in track and field.
So wow.
That's, you know,
good link.
Little fun fact.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. They can really run.
Those Stricklands.
Now, St Kilda finished 8th with 1 win, 13 losses, and a... slightly healthier percentage than they were used to with 39.13%.
Oh, yeah. They've cracked the 30s.
No, they had cracked the 30s. They'd almost cracked the 40s. Yeah, not the best. That gets us to Carlton, who, again, for the fourth season in a row, finished 7th.
God, thank God for St Kilda.
Yeah, or Carlton
would just be having a terrible time.
But Carlton were actually showing signs of improvement. So if you remember from seasons past, they were only really beating St Kilda and one other team, maybe. Mm. This time they actually beat 5 teams. They beat St Kilda twice. They beat Melbourne, South Melbourne, and they beat Collingwood for their first time ever in their history in their round 4 win, beating them 4-1, 25-9 points. Collingwood were the only team that whole season that only managed who didn't score a goal in a game.
Mm. Collingwood were
in the season proper. I think St Kilda might have had that in the finals as well, but Collingwood against Carlton didn't score a goal.
Wow.
Mm.
They had Carlton's leading goal kicker was Joe Sullivan for the season, and he kicked 18 goals, twice that of the next closest, who was Bill Lewis.
Yeah.
Mm.
As well.
Yeah. Good. Well, Carlton finished 7th with 5 wins, 9 losses, and a percentage of 70.61%.
Mm. And more to come for them next seasons.
Which brings us to Melbourne, who finished the home and away season in 6th place.
That's right.
So, unlike past seasons, and if you remember, Kaz, they'd actually had really good starts in the last few seasons.
Yeah.
And they'd strung wins in a row and, you know, games of 5 or 6 wins.
Yeah.
And then they'd fall away in the second half of the season. This season was almost the opposite. They started a bit flaky, but then picked up towards the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm. We've got Fitzroy handing out some pain in round 5. Even though they had a win over Essendon in round 2, there's a bit inconsistent. So there you go.
So round 5, 66-27. I mean, it's only 39 points.
Yeah.
Not too painful.
No.
So some of the players I found for Melbourne were Dan Moriarty. Did you remember about him?
No, I didn't.
He was the first player reported and suspended for Melbourne.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it happened actually twice that season. The first one in round 9, he was reported and suspended for jostling an umpire.
Oh, I like the sound of this.
Oh, yeah. Jostling. That's great. And then in the finals, in the sectional finals, he was reported for striking and was given 2 games, which ultimately meant he missed the grand final.
Could have been the difference.
It could have. Mm. Well, didn't matter in the end.
No.
But, yeah, the first player to get reported and suspended, so I thought that was quite a fun fact.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of fortuitous events, things like that, in this season, which leads to, obviously, the grand final.
The other thing I found interesting, I found a player called Frank Langley who played for the Demons in his first season. Mm. He was 18 years old and still attending high school. No. He was in year 12 at Caulfield Grammar.
Yep.
So he'd spent the whole season at school and then playing on weekends.
And then playing on the weekends. Yeah. Mm. Good on him.
Brilliant.
Yeah. I think he wins... kicks a lot of goals in the future. So
well, you can see even in his first season, he kicked 9 goals for the season. So
solid.
Going strong.
Oh, he'd be happy with that.
Yeah, for a first-year 18-year-old skinny player.
Hmm.
Pretty good.
Hmm.
We'll get to Melbourne's final season when we get to the finals, but they won... And do you guys have anything else?
Oh, I was just going to mention Dick Wardle, who was the captain that year.
Yeah.
Who kicked 19 goals for the season. He... so he was one of the best of field in the grand final.
Yeah.
Mm. And managed to kick 1 goal. He was one of the players who represented Victoria in the State of Origin match as well. So yeah. he had a really good season that year. And ended up playing 60 games and kicking 37 goals for Melbourne over his career.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good. I picked up someone who was in the grand final team. Don't know how much he played during the season, actually. Corey Gardner. And he went on to represent Australia. And notably, in 1904, he was the only person from Australia to go to St. Louis, Lewis, to represent Australia for the Olympics.
The only person.
True.
Really?
In hurdles and long jump. Not sure exactly why. I'll get back to you. That'll stop my
think Australia is one of only, 5 countries that have sent athletes to every single Olympics.
Mm.
So to have one representative. Mm. So that would make him flag bearer as well?
Yeah, probably.
I assume so.
Yeah.
Also from that grand final team, so, you know, don't know if he was playing regularly in the season or not, but played a few games, was William McClelland. And you might remember that name from the trophy. So he was part of this Melbourne team, obviously, this year at least. And he went on to become the league president, the MCC president, and was involved in the administration until he was 81.
Wow.
Oh.
So this is a football person for sure. And that trophy, the naming of the McClelland Trophy started in 1950. Anyway, so
yeah, which is
around the,
which is now handed out to the team that finishes on top at the end of the season.
Yeah,
It used to be something slightly different because it involved the reserves and the under 19s as well. But now it's just for whoever finishes on top.
Yeah, yeah, and it was Gerald Brosnan's first season, I think, and he it says that he went on to become one of the best centre half forwards of the whole era, and became captain later on. So, anyway, this is his first foray into footy.
Yeah, awesome. So, Melbourne finished 6th with 6 wins and 8 losses and a percentage of 101.71%, which we'll move on now to South Melbourne.
Oh, and Warwick Armstrong is retired.
Yeah, so if you remember last episode, there's a player called The Big Ship.
The Big Ship.
Who actually went on.
Off.
So, he's retired. He went on to
he
become.
He got scuttled.
He went on to become Australia's cricket captain.
Mm.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
Made in many towns.
All right. So South Melbourne, in round 2, they kicked 6 goals, 21, to beat St Kilda. And then again in round 9, played St Kilda and kicked 5 goals, 22. So their aggregate score against St Kilda was 11 goals, 43. So I don't know what it is about St Kilda's defence with South Melbourne, but they seem to worry
pushing
them.
Pushing the
mind. Yeah. most interesting thing we found, though, Kaz, and we were talking about it, was the dispute South Melbourne had with Geelong.
Mm, yes. Is this over the ladies, the
yeah.
stand?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
you have that there?
Yeah, I do have this here. So the ladies got their own area, but there was a game... this is on the 17th of September, so this is deep into the season here. And maybe I'll just go... Because it's hard to paraphrase this. It's just too good, this article. Geelong and South at odds over the ladies' privileges. What do you think about this, Sandy? The most trivial of disputes arising over access of Geelong lady members to free entrance at South Melbourne has dragged on for months now and has threatened Geelong's membership of the VFL. So it was a serious thing. Oh, that's right, because it's over the fines. First, South refused the ladies, and then Geelong refused all South members as payback.
Yeah, so back in round 5, I think South Melbourne had a home game and refused to let Geelong ladies members in for free. Because I think they were supposed to be let in for free, part of being a member back then.
Sounds ridiculous.
Yeah.
Geelong refused to pay... the league demanded Geelong pay South £6 in compensation. Geelong refused to pay and copped a £20 fine, which they also ignored.
Yeah.
Now the Geelong president, Jay McMullen, has resigned and the affair has been settled with the old practices maintained. There you go. So we all got over it in the end.
Yeah, so South Melbourne, Geelong had a bit of biff going on there.
We bit of black,
on
the bad blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A bit cheeky of them not to let the South supporters in, the Geelong ladies members in.
Yeah, and look, we'll see whether it boils over in the future.
So it could, you know, those sorts of things do lead to rivalries
yeah.
in the end as well.
Absolutely.
Bad blood, and sometimes good games as well. You want to go to those games where there's been
there's something going on up here outside it. Yeah. Keeps it interesting.
There was a few comments about Geelong propping up a lot of the clubs in the because they were such a strong club. They actually paid for a lot of the other clubs to exist. So that, and they, because they weren't doing that well, they were getting a bit frustrated with that.
Geelong.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, they were doing like successfully during the home and away season. They were finishing on top.
Yeah.
Or in the top four every single season. Just, but
yeah. the wheels fell off.
Couldn't capitalise in the finals. Yeah.
Oh, I want a bit of glory for all that effort.
So that's the first four teams. Now, we usually talk about the kind of State of Origin or the rep games that happen here. We couldn't find a lot about it this time. All, the only information I could find out was that Victoria again beat South Australia in Adelaide by around 4 goals, but I couldn't find any information on the scores or who played.
Not only going through that, I mean, I said before Dick Wardle played, but I couldn't find like a team or anything like that. It was only a few sort of random players.
No, and quite often they'd have a repeat one, so whether they played once or twice, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah,
because the weather was so bad last year.
That's right. Yeah. So that's 2 wins against the Crow Eaters for the Vics, though.
Oh, yes.
So far.
Well, as long as they've got the win.
And we're 1-2 against the Ballarat League. But they haven't played them for a few seasons now.
And they were a strong league.
They were.
Especially Ballarat. Strong club.
All right, let's move on to a team that finished fourth, which was Collingwood.
Ooh.
Which gets us closer and closer to Dick Watch.
That's right, Dick Warning.
Do you have an alarm for that?
Needs to be one.
What a term like.
Yeah. So in at Victoria Park, they opened a ladies' grandstand.
Because
at that time, a third of Collingwood's 2,000 members were ladies. So they had a special ladies grandstand built.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep. Now, here's an interesting fact that I found quite a good prediction as well. In round four, to celebrate one of the victories in the Boer War, the Essendon versus Collingwood game was actually moved to a Wednesday.
Oh.
Why
That's
not?
That's cool. So it's the first one of like a, you know, almost like a... exhibition type.
Yeah. Well, not exhibition, because they're still counted, but, it's very much like Anzac Day. It's a standalone game that's there to celebrate.
Yeah, and now more games have been moved to Thursdays, or you've got your Good Friday and those sorts of
ones. Yeah, and we've got to remember back then it was just Saturday afternoon games.
Yeah.
All starting at the same time.
Yeah, you can imagine it would have been quite a big deal back then.
I mean, I feel like it's a big deal for us, but you know, thinking about it now, it's kind of something that is... kind of always happened, but it still feels like a big deal for some reason.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, so that was round four. Essendon beat Carlton 13-7-85 to Collingwood 2-4-16. So a good 69-point win there to the Bombers. Which gets us, Kaz, to Dick Watch. And this is the showdown we promised in the pregame.
That's right. Now, Dick Condon has been misbehaving and he's finally... gone too far this year.
We love Dick Condon on this show. So our two,
listened.
Our two favourites are Dick Condon and Ivo Crap.
Yeah,
and they finally come head to head this season.
Yeah, exactly.
The perfect storm.
Ivo Crap because of his silly name and otherwise completely reliable and fantastic person. Dick Condon because of his enigmatic and silly.
That seems a slightly biased umpire's opinion there.
Yeah.
I'll be careful of that in the future. So we've heard about Dick Condon mouthing off, and he's been given the captainship this year. I think it was halfway through the year. Bill Proudfoot is making it down. Anyway, so because Dick Condon has lots of tactics, is talking to the players in the rooms about the setups and everything like that. And otherwise, you know, is popular for marking and twisting it as he marks. As soon as he hits the ground, he's sprinting off and able to dodge through traffic. He's got all the tricks in the bag, apart from his mouth. They say. He gets suspended for 3 weeks for mouthing off at an umpire, for abusing a boundary umpire. I'm not even sure if they were institutionalized yet. Maybe there was one there that day.
Yeah.
And so then I think it was 2 weeks in, and then he on the third week, whether I'm not sure whether he was playing or not, but he comes into the huddle and starts a fight with his own teammate.
Yeah.
And so increasing his stupidity now. And then I suppose he finally comes back, and I think it's a game against Geelong, and he abuses an umpire again, and the league finally go, that's it.
Didn't he threaten to walk off? He's like, come on, guys, we're going off the ground. We're leaving this game because I disagree with the umpire.
That's right. They're 1 point in front, and he's annoyed with the umpire, and they walk off. And
they actually did it.
Yeah, he's gesturing to all the players walk off, and then the umpire goes, right, well, I'll report the whole team and you can all be banished from the league.
Oh,
so the
wow.
players, I think they all slump back.
No. We didn't mean it. We're sorry.
We're just with this crazy guy here.
Yeah. He's a loose cannon.
And so, slap. Life ban. Banished. 18.
Really?
Yeah. What? So that was umpire crap, wasn't it, that he had that confrontation with?
And they confront again.
I'll do that, okay.
Yeah. Oh. Now, it's
after his lifetime ban.
So here we go. This time, the league suspended him for life, and Collingwood were content to let him stew for 18 months without lifting the fine.
Okay, but if we go back, didn't he say something quite rude to Ivo Crap about his daughter, perhaps?
Yeah, so...
I think there was something to do with a Lipton iced tea bottle, actually.
That's what I heard.
So yeah, and I think I'm just trying to find out whether it was in a final or not, but I'm pretty sure it was against Melbourne or something. But Ivo Crap's umpiring this game, and he's into him from the start of the game, and finally says to him after a decision, he goes, "Your daughter's a bloody whore."
Yeah, girl's a bloody whore.
Yeah, girl. You can't exactly mince words there. That's pretty.
No.
It's not like
you haven't said that. No. There's no.
And I think Crap probably made the right decision.
Took offence to that.
Yeah.
Surprisingly.
And, truth hurts, Crap. Nah, joking. I'm called for.
So that's it. Definitely gone forever. And Collingwood banished him to the wilderness. He appeals it and comes back.
Hey,
and
ends don't spoil it for our valued listeners.
So, and that's where we're up to on Dick Watch.
Dick Watch.
Stay tuned for more Dick Watch in future
seasons. I think you need an alarm for next episode. Some sort of siren to go off.
Imagine that happening today.
Just can you imagine?
Going up, your girl's a whore.
Can you imagine? Like, especially the media cycle.
On the umpire's mind.
Oh dear. Can you imagine? There'd be many organisations upset with that kind of language.
There should be. And the other abuse is swearing and, you know, mouthing off constantly. And getting in fights with his own teammates.
Yeah.
Reckless.
Yeah.
But it's not the last we've heard of Dick Condon.
That's right.
He will be back. Yeah. So Collingwood finished fourth that season with 8 wins, 6 losses, and a percentage of 116.11. Which brings us to the Bombers.
Ooh, the mighty the Bombers same
called
olds.
The same olds. Mm. Yes. Right. And I will sing that song at one stage. I will sing the same old song.
Yeah.
I have found it.
Apparently it was just started by a bunch of barrackers.
Yeah, and I've got it.
Love it.
Listen to it.
Yes.
Interesting to note that there was a group of fans this season who got sick of Essendon playing their games at the East Melbourne Cricket Ground because they should be playing in Essendon.
Yeah.
So they actually left and they formed their own team, which they called Essendon Town, and they played in the VFA.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, and it was later called Essendon A for association or something like that. Yeah.
Did Essendon at this stage have any... connection, like, was there the, you know, the Windy Hill and all that sort of stuff? I can't obviously.
They had
not
formed in Essendon, and the McCrackens, they played their original games in Essendon, but then moved to East Melbourne.
East Melbourne because
it was easier, it was a better ground. There was no ground, I think, at that stage. So interesting to note. So we've got Albert Thurgood, who's back playing properly now.
Mm, yeah, 25 goals.
He was banned for that for 1898. He played one game in 1899. In round four, he kicked the ball reportedly 93.5 metres.
Oh, what? That's huge.
Supposedly,
yeah. I don't think there might be a little bit of salt on that one.
It goes here, 100 yards. So, boom, 100.
About that.
And in round 11, they had quite a depleted team versus Collingwood. So much so they had to bring the club secretary into play who hadn't played since the VFA days. Collingwood. They played admirably, but they lost to Collingwood 50-29.
I'm just imagining like a 50-year-old gentleman with glasses on.
Yeah.
Just wandering out. You know.
All right, guys. Yeah. Seriously, come on. Now, I think also with that, there was actually a supporter who was invited to play.
Oh, really?
Living out every childhood dream of being asked to play.
Everyone, yeah.
And
every Hollywood movie about
sports. Yeah.
And they don't win, right? But he kicks 2 goals.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
There's a film in that, for sure.
Mate.
Fantastic, right. There's a bit more to talk about with Essendon in the finals, but we'll get to that in the finals.
And so, and because we pumped Albert Thurgood as one of the greatest games of this entire era, maybe ever. So should we delve into a bit more of his details, or maybe save it? The Brighton grammarian.
Was he?
Yeah, some other things. Well, I mean, we've talked about him enough. Like a true champion, he rarely had an off day, and he could kick brilliantly in every type of kick imaginable. Noted historian C.C. Mullen wrote that Thurgood had a lordly appearance on field and looked like a military general, the head of his troops.
Huh.
Thurgood made a name for himself at Brighton Grammar, schoolboy, and St Kilda named him the side in 1891. Anyway, we'll leave it there.
All right.
Could be more about him later.
So the Bombers finished, the same olds, finished third with 8 wins, 6 losses and a percentage of 137.32. So second on the ladder that year was Geelong, who, as we spoke about before, had, you know, continually finished high on the ladder, always in the top four, but not really getting the job done come finals time.
And they won that game where Dick Condon staged the walk-off, even though...
Oh, that was against Geelong.
Yeah, even though they were up at the time, Collingwood was up at the time.
Surprising that might have thrown them off their game a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah. So full forward Eddie James, if you remember, he topped the goal kicking in one of the previous seasons. He injured his knee so badly in one of the early rounds that he actually was forced to retire at age 26.
Mm. Oh, that's sad.
A bit like the Ox.
Bit like the,
yeah, he came down back, though.
He came back. Yeah.
He had what, same. 3 knee operations? 3 knee injuries?
I think so.
When he came back, he was all right at the end of his.
Love you, Ox.
Yeah. as we mentioned, they had that dispute with South Melbourne over the ladies and the members. And from all reports, the round 13 game against Fitzroy had the best 10 minutes of play for the year.
Oh.
However, the Cats won 57-12, so it doesn't sound like it was a great game. But
there's a brief glimpse there.
Just the first 10 minutes.
I don't know if it was the first 10 minutes, but a 10-minute burst of just amazing play.
Yes, looking forward to more refinements in the game. Maybe we could get this happening throughout more of the game.
Yeah. So Geelong finished second, 9 wins, 5 losses, and a healthy percentage of 150.9%. Which brings us to the team on the top of the ladder, the back-to-back premiers, Fitzroy.
Oh, yes. Strong team.
Yes. So Fitzroy... started well again. Oh, started with a loss, actually. They had a loss, and then a win, and then a loss, and then they had a long winning streak. Actually won 9 games in a row again from rounds 4 to 12.
So who did they lose to in the beginning there?
Collingwood beat them in round 1, and you remember that Collingwood and Fitzroy had quite a rivalry as well because they were so close in proximity to each other.
Was it against Fitzroy that Collingwood was going to pay the players extra.
And it's also against Collingwood. Fitzroy was when Collingwood wore the black socks.
Oh, to throw them off.
Yeah, to throw them off.
Classic move.
Yeah. So Fitzroy looked unstoppable. In round 11, Fitzroy players were badly jostled by the crowd after beating South Melbourne by 6 points, Lakeside Oval.
Mm.
But they were just dominant, basically, in the year 1900. They didn't really, you know, they went into the finals. They had 11 wins and 3 losses in the home and away season itself.
Yeah. Amazing.
Thomas Beecham was consistent in a lot of the grand finals, and he became an umpire.
Yeah.
And
big umpire slant all the time.
Slipping it in.
Honestly.
Just slipping it
I
in.
I might be here for some
downloads. Are going to be down this week. He almost became part of the team of the century for Fitzroy. Just didn't quite get it, but a very, very solid play for them.
Yep.
We've got, obviously, Pat Hickey still playing. His son was a notable halfback because he became inaugural treasurer of the VFL. The umpires and the administration is what I'm picking up on. Maybe I should tone it down a bit. Yeah.
Not so, at all.
No, okay. And this guy, Con Hickey, was quite involved with the Australian National Football Council, who are involved in all sorts of things. So they actually also, many, many years down the track, we'll probably pick up later, they tried this cross-code thing with rugby union and Aussie rules.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And this guy
caught that.
Yeah, Con Hickey was part of that.
Awesome.
Well, I mean, I remember you saying, Tim, in the beginning that Tom Wills, who came up with it, did take a lot of things from a lot of other sports, including rugby union.
Yeah.
So you imagine there's sort of that amalgamation in there as well.
Yeah.
I think they tried one game.
Ah. Didn't quite work out.
Interesting. Not sure.
So, yeah, Fitzroy finished on top, as I said. 11 wins, 3 losses, percentage of 167.97. One thing I forgot to mention was I chose an Essendon player to focus on in my little player review. So I chose a player called Bill Newhaven Jackson, who played for Essendon. He was actually nicknamed Newhaven after the winner of the 1896 Melbourne Cup.
Oh.
I don't know why. He must have been fast.
Stallion.
Maybe. He came to Essendon from the Ballarat Imperials. But he was also quite a successful cyclist.
I wonder if he played in and won any of the state of inter-league matches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good question. He was a great cyclist. He won the Melbourne to Warrnambool Classic in 1897. And was a bulky and artistic player and was skilled at barging through packs. He was a magnificent kick and a high mark, and he played the game aggressively. He was a follower in the 1898 grand final loss to Fitzroy and was used more as a forward in his later career. So in this season, the 1900 season, he only played 8 games, kicking 3 goals, and he injured himself during the season, and he intended to retire. But he actually came back to be part of the same old final series.
Yeah, and the reason why he hadn't played earlier on is he was recovering from a cycling incident.
Yes, he did. All right, well, that brings us to the finals. Now, Sandy, do you know
more finals?
Hey?
Finals for everyone.
Finals for everyone. Do you know about the Everybody. Farcical finals series? So no. Basically, with the finals system in 1900, everyone makes finals.
Yeah, well, of course. But yeah, it makes sense.
Finals.
Yeah.
Everyone gets finals. So they split the ladder up into two halves, pool A and pool B.
Yes, that's right.
They all
that's
play.
Right. Yeah.
And then the winners of each pool play in a grand final.
Yes.
And was it still odds versus evens? One,
yep.
3, 5, 7.
Yep. It was.
Okay.
Got to remember that. I think this is the last year of this system.
It is the last year of the system because as we get through it,
there
is a good reason.
Yeah.
Robin. Several things happened. So the first round finals in the South Melbourne game, South Melbourne playing Essendon, one player, Harry Lamp, actually scored South Melbourne's entire score. of 3 goals won.
He lamp shot the lights out, you should say.
Slam dunk.
So Essendon beat South in that game quite convincingly by 40 points. But a player scoring the team's entire score. That's all right.
You would just kick a turn. You'd be down back and you'd just be on it. So yeah, I think he won the kicking that year.
So what was the breakdown of the score?
It was 3 goals won. So he kicked the entire score.
The entire score.
Yeah.
It would have been more impressive if it was like 11-7 or something.
Yeah. No, definitely. But still,
but
an entire
still
score.
Unbelievable.
Has he got bragging rights there?
In the first week as well, Melbourne held Geelong to 2 points after half-time in their 17-point win.
Yes.
Which, Melbourne finishing sixth, Geelong finishing second.
Seems crazy,
quite a differential there.
Especially for the betting.
And quite a differential in terms of their seasons as well. Geelong having finished on top, or near the top again.
It's that week off between the...
Yeah.
Well, there's no final. Week. Oh, actually, that's another good thing to note. Round 3 was actually played at the end of the season.
It was rescheduled because of
heavy rain.
The weather,
yeah.
Oh, amazing.
So round 3 didn't happen. They just scrapped it, and then they said, we'll play it at the end of the season before the finals.
So there wasn't a week off. Sorry, I was looking at those dates. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. They were on the 18th and then the week after.
Mm. So Melbourne came out firing.
Mm. And in that week, it says in round 3 that Carlton actually beat Melbourne.
Yeah, Carlton beat Melbourne quite convincingly by 20 points.
Yeah.
In round three.
So maybe they really did have a week off.
Finals.
So we lost to Carlton, who finished second.
Just before finals.
Who finished seventh on the ladder.
Just before finals, though.
That's crazy.
You just can't tell.
So Geelong again losing in the first week of the finals. A bit of a monkey on their back now. you'd have to say.
Yeah.
Just not being able to get the job done when it comes to finals.
Yeah.
Second week of the finals, there was a 1-point win, Carlton defeating South Melbourne, 31-30 at Princess Park.
Ooh, oh, that's a nail biter.
A 3-point win to Essendon over Fitzroy, 39-36.
Very close scores.
Some of them are, yeah. And it was one of the games of the season as well. That one.
Very close one between St Kilda and Melbourne
as well. Yeah, so Melbourne kept St Kilda scoreless until the last quarter.
Oh, beautiful.
So they didn't score for the whole game until the last quarter. So it was Melbourne, 12 goals, 14-86, defeated St Kilda 2-3-15.
Wow.
And that 2-3 was kicked in the last quarter.
Incredible.
So they kind of took their foot off the gas there.
But, you can understand.
But they had they'd pretty much done their job.
Yeah.
And then we moved to the sectional finals week three. And Collingwood actually lost. Collingwood actually beat Melbourne. So Collingwood and Melbourne were in the same. Yep, were in the same pool, and therefore finished on the same amount of wins and losses. But because of Melbourne's thumping defeat of St Kilda,
their percentage was
far superior.
Yes. Went through.
So Melbourne finished on top of the ladder in their pool,
Section B.
Okay.
Yeah. On percentage. And in the Section A ladder, Essendon finished on top because they actually defeated Fitzroy, who were, if you remember, they finished on top of the ladder for the season.
So that then caused the same thing that happened 2 years previous.
It did. So that meant the semi-final was Melbourne versus Essendon to decide who would be the best team. But Fitzroy had the right to challenge because they finished on top of the ladder. They had the right to challenge the winner of that game in a grand final, if you will.
Okay.
Yes. We've got champion of the colony was Fred Leach, and he played for Collingwood. So should we talk about him now?
You can talk about Fred
now
Leach
that
quickly.
Collingwood are knocked out.
Yep.
So the enigmatic Fred Leach was...
God, that's a great word. It just covers a lot of things.
It's quite broad.
was regarded by some experts, such as Dick Lee's father, as the greatest Collingwood footballer in the club's first 50 years. So he's one champion of the colony here, so he's got some recognition. He had an uncanny sense of anticipation. Was equally brilliant in the air as on the ground, and recruited from Burundara. So, yeah, and then champion of the colony that year.
Nice.
Excellent effort. He could run 100 yards in even time.
Wow, impressive.
There we go. Notable player.
100 yards in even time.
I don't know what
does that mean?
I am just reading out the facts.
Not odd time, so maybe 36 seconds. Yeah. 37.
Yeah.
Or maybe maybe it was like something flat, like 28. 27.
So who won that game?
Which one?
The Melbourne...
Collingwood? And the
semi-final.
Sorry, I interrupted that.
All right, yeah. All right.
I'm very keen to know.
Because
this is the person that went into the final with Fitzroy.
This was the semi-final. Yeah. So Essendon actually lost the player, WC Jackson. He went down early in the first quarter, leaving Essendon with 17 men. So you lose someone, there's no reserves.
Well, you win some, you lose some, Tim.
You do, unfortunately.
Not competitive.
No, not at all.
So Melbourne came out firing. They had a great opening half. It was very desperate play. Great spectacle by all to watch.
Yeah.
It came really desperate in the last quarter. Essendon kicked 1-7.
Oh.
Oh.
And was highlighted by Essendon captain George Stuckey, who actually ran into an open goal but mistook the goalpost for the point post and kicked a point, doing a Malcolm Blight, if you will. But
thundered it
early. So kicked a big point.
It got a little Stuckey.
So they threw away chance after chance, whereas Melbourne only kicked one goal in that last quarter, but it was enough to give them a 2-point win.
Fascinating.
So 7-3-45 defeated Essendon 5-13.
Sounds like quite the game.
Doesn't it?
And we're into the grand final.
But and you can just imagine the Essendon supporters screaming, "We were one man down."
Yeah.
For weeks following.
He's worth a goal.
Yeah.
Can I just
What are you, a one man team?
Clarify, with that, the rule about the previous premier being able to challenge, is that only if they finished second?
So they've got to have at least 8 points.
Yeah, so, okay, so they have to have won two out of the three sections.
Yeah, so in those sectional finals.
Yeah.
Just interesting system.
Which means they can't rest their players and then come back for the grand final.
I mean, what I'm liking
here is that Melbourne finished, essentially quite, last almost, let's be honest, and now next minute,
grand final.
Where we are.
Yeah.
Incredible.
See, maybe that would have happened this year.
Yeah.
I don't want to...
Well, we missed out on the grand final by how much percent?
Point. Not the grand final, the finals.
The finals, sorry.
All right, well, let's get to the grand final now. So, Fitzroy was so confident in his grand final.
Oh, I bet.
Melbourne
had
finished sixth.
Yes.
They'd only won six games for the whole season proper.
Yeah.
They'd actually organised a bus to pick them up after the grand final that had, Go Maroons written on it. It was going to take them to Fitzroy for a parade.
You don't ever count the
eggs can
before
you?
The hatch. What's the saying? You just can't.
You can't get the grand finals before the hatch.
this game was played at the East Melbourne Cricket Ground. Remember the last two were played at the Junction. This is the East Melbourne Cricket Ground.
Yes.
Yeah, and a good crowd.
A good crowd of around 20,000 people, so bigger than the last two seasons. Contributed about £500 to the gate.
Whoa.
For 2 hours, a large crowd was stirred to enthusiasm by magnificent play, the earnestness of the players, and by the fact that until the ringing of the final bell, the issue, or the winner, was in doubt. They didn't know who was going to win.
No.
Fitzroy were the favourites. They had picked their team of field, while Melbourne had made some slight alterations to their 18. C. Gardner and Ryan in, and Souden and Eric Gardner out. And interesting to note, two balls had been especially made for this match by Mr. Tom Sherin.
Oh, that's very special.
One for each half. All right, Troops, you want to take us through the first quarter?
Absolutely. So, on the first bounce, Drouin got the ball and he tried to run, but Hay intervened and Drouin got lost, and Drouin lost his chance there. Drouin playing for
Fitzroy.
Yes. Dick Wardle, who I spoke about before, playing for Melbourne, opened the scoring with a behind. But then Fitzroy got to work with a grand chain of clever marks between Clark, McSpearin, McDougall, Kiernan and Barker, and then returning to Kiernan, the little man placed for a behind.
It rolls off the tongue.
Into commentator voice. So then Melbourne again had a turn with Leith with a wonderful mark, who put up their first goal. So it was 1-1 to 0-1 at this stage, with high marking by Grace and Sloan. Prominent features. Grace, obviously.
Mick Grace.
Yeah. Very good player.
Yeah, great player.
Parkin was clearing the Melbourne goal well, and three clean half-distance marks between Herring, Wardle and McGuinness took the ball up the centre. McGuinness had his shot and Moriarty stopped it right on the goal. I love that name, Moriarty. It's great.
He's magic.
He's magic Moriarty. after that, Ryan pounced for the ball, and as it dropped, working and turning it cleverly, he got between Moriarty and Sharp and tipped it between the posts. Melbourne people cheered Ryan for his cleverness as well as for their second goal. Fitzroy went in to equalise matters, and just as the bell rang, McDougall put on a behind, so the scores at quarter time were Melbourne 2-3 to Fitzroy's 1-4.
I feel like I'm there. This is great.
I know. I love it.
Now, I'm just wondering, I remember I said earlier that Dan Moriarty was reported and suspended and missed the grand final? Maybe I was wrong.
No, Dan Moriarty was. This is Jeff Moriarty.
Jeff Moriarty.
Oh, of course.
So I don't know whether they were relations or not.
Oh, Jeff Moriarty plays for Fitzroy.
Yes.
Yes.
Who did Dan Moriarty play for?
Dan played for Melbourne.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Sorry, yeah.
Oh.
There you go.
Who was that?
All right, second quarter, Kazzy.
Second quarter. And not as fantastic a racing calling voice as Charlie, unfortunately. as soon as the teams changed ends, Beecham forwarded. And Grace again marked grandly and dropped a goal. McEwen and Robinson relieved their goal, only to find two rushes by Purse, bringing the ball back to them again. Fitzroy were having the best of it at this stage, and there is no sparing of friend or foe. Nice. Yeah. The defenders on both sides were very much in evidence, and nothing could have been finer than the work of Brosnan, Barker, Clark, Grace, Sloan, Kiernan, Robinson and Jenkins on one side, and of Herring, Moody, McGuinness, Wardle, Purse, and lists them all, Leith, McClelland and Parkin on the other. Only 2 points separated the teams at halftime, the scores being 2-7 to 2-5, so not a big scoring quarter there.
No, quite tight, so 17 to 19. Fitzroy in front by 2 points at halftime.
Absolutely.
Do you reckon they had halftime entertainment back then?
Oh.
Just the crowd themselves probably entertaining
themselves.
A bit of a throng.
Who knows?
Let's find out. Well, you can next week.
To the Argus. third quarter. So Melbourne began very strongly after the interval, with Leith and McGuinness interchanging unselfishly, and Wardill with a clever turn just missing a goal. A few minutes later, he repeated that turn, but made no mistake in direction this time, and the two flags waved again. Geddes of Melbourne was pushed, and with a fine drop kick, put up a fourth goal.
Ooh.
Langley arrived to relieve. Langley again relieved the pressure, and Wardill and Hay gave Ryan a chance, which Moriarty just saved. It was a wonderful, fast game, and then, for nearly a quarter of an hour, Melbourne had to fight for dear life down in the corner of the Jolimont wing. Fitzroy were playing magnificent football, but they could not break through. Yes. Fitzroy were fighting for a goal, and a premiership was in the balance. But the quarter ended with no alteration. Melbourne had done all the scoring, two goals and three behinds during that quarter.
There you go. So we just, got, to enjoy just got in tight and stopped
them.
Brilliant. Did, brilliant. So 32-19 at three-quarter time.
32-19
So premiership quarter, time. They've held Fitzroy scoreless. So that's a pretty good result.
So the fourth quarter started in the same fashion, with Melbourne just holding the Maroons back. But then Kiernan and Grace added two quick behinds for the Maroons. Bad kick in by Scholl was then marked by Kiernan, whose kick only again managed a behind. So three quick behinds for Fitzroy there. Geddes took Scholl's place after that. And from his kick, Young, Hay, Leith and Ryan worked it down to Cumberland, who's got Melbourne's ninth behind for the afternoon. McSpearin then added another behind. A fine mark to McClellan turned the tide once more. A magnificent play by McGuinness sent the ball to Leith. In the excitement, Sloan threw McGuinness heavily and the crowd cried, "Oh!" Fitzroy were taking their gruel like men. That's a great sentence. Yeah. They were defending their goal fiercely. They obviously thought they, you know, just got to put the pressure on. Yeah. And they'd come over the top.
No, McGuinness is not a protected species.
Yeah.
Taken down.
Yeah. Wardle scored another behind. Best on ground so far, it sounds. Dick Wardle. Before Hickey, with a fine dash, sent the ball to Grace. And with only 4 minutes to play, the third goal appeared for Fitzroy. Then came a desperate 4 minutes. Hickey was working as if his life depended on the issue. And every man on the side threw his weight into the scale. But Gardner, Rippon, Heron, Parkin and Scholl in turn forced back the rushes. Until Barker, with a running shot, put on a behind. After that, almost immediately, the bell rang and Melbourne were the winners of the match and the premiership.
Magnificent.
The scores being Melbourne 4 goals, 10 behinds, 34, to Fitzroy 3 goals, 12 behinds, 30.
Incredible. There we go. Oh, that was good.
And that was Melbourne's first premiership since their formation, I think, as well. They didn't win one in the VFA.
They did not win one in the VFA, no. So there
so
you go.
The oldest club.
1900. Yeah. Bring in the 20th century with a bang.
I'll take it.
From sixth straight to the top.
Yeah.
Yes.
Take a bit of a wrap up there, Sandy.
I do. It was a magnificent match, played throughout in the best spirit imaginable. Fast, furious and full of energy. It never was over rough. And crap, the umpire must be highly complimented on his handling of such... Did you write this, guys? On his handling of such a game. Each team earned the same amount of free kicks. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Very interesting.
I've heard Crap doing a good job.
Crap has shown some fine umpiring before, but never has he appeared to such advantage as in this game, and he richly deserved the high praise awarded him afterwards.
By Dick Condon.
Unlikely. Melbourne have every reason to be proud of their team, and in their dressing room at the finish, the scene was an indescribable one. Men whose allegiance to the Red Stockings had never wavered during all those 24 years were there. Fans and family thronged in the room. Oh, can you? I just got the goosebumps warming.
I'm feeling it.
And cheered till they could cheer no more.
It's tragic.
They cheered Wardle, they toasted him, and speeches were made all round.
Next
then
year.
Sloan, the Fitzroy captain, came down from his dressing room and in a manly speech congratulated the winners. They had hoped to win, he said, and his congratulations must perforce be tinged with a little regret at being beaten. They had hoped and expected to win, but they had met their Waterloo. And on behalf of his team and himself, he wished to congratulate Melbourne. They had been fairly and squarely beaten by a better team on the day. And next to Fitzroy, he would have sooner seen Melbourne premiers than any other club. That's nice.
That is nice.
Everyone cheered him, and Sloan had only voiced the feelings of the crowd. The better team had undoubtedly won, and on the merits of the game, no other result was possible. It was long after 6 o'clock before the last of the team left the ground.
Go. Now the game's finished, and immediately the furor about the finals erupts. Even though,
how dare Melbourne be allowed to come to the finals? They finished sixth.
Yeah.
Even though it was a good game,
it makes the home and away season the fast. Why would you bother?
Exactly. Well, just start from the final.
Because if you look at it, Melbourne only won 10 games in total for the whole season, including the finals.
Yeah.
Fitzroy won 11 in the home and away season itself, which counts for nothing.
Yeah. Win when it matters.
Yeah. That sounds like us. Look, Melbourne were beaten twice in that round robin thing, and the only win was against St Kilda. We beat Essendon in that semi. Anyway, it's history now.
First premiership. Well, that brings us to the end of the year 1900. So
I just wanted to mention the crowd for the grand final, I think, has risen again to, it is now at 20,181. So it's seems to have come up every year on year. I know 1897 was 10,000, and now we've doubled in 3 years.
There was no grand final in 1897.
No, the largest crowd was 10,000, so it's doubled.
That's pretty good.
Mm. Three years. Good.
So impressive. Let's just go through our awards for the end of the season. The champion of the colony.
The final champion of the colony.
Was the person I was saying, whose first name I do not want to mess up, Fred Leach from Collingwood.
Yes. The best player in the grand final was apparently Vic Cumberland.
There you go.
There he is.
For Melbourne. The highest goal kicker was Albert Thurgood for Essendon, scoring 26 goals.
26, there you go.
25 in the home and away season, I believe.
There you go.
And only one in the finals.
Nice.
I'm not sure.
He was stopped. Maybe that's why that McClelland won the... he was a good player. Anyway,
possibly.
Albert was stopped.
St Kilda again won the Wooden Spoon. The highest score...
But they got off the ground.
They got a win. They beat the Premier.
They beat the
grand final winner.
That's amazing.
It was a feather in your cap.
Yeah, they lost to St Kilda, who had never won a game, but then won the grand final. So they've probably gone from a dark day at the start of the season to the best day at the end of the season. What contrast.
Exactly.
Silver line. Geelong still hold the highest score for 23-24, 162. Scored the previous season. And the premiership tallies. Fitzroy, 2. Essendon, 1. Melbourne, 1.
I like it.
Yeah. That sounds good to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which brings us towards the end of our show. Sandy, I'd like to thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I've got a small gift for you.
Oh, this is exciting.
I found a copy of the 1991 Elimination Final Football Record.
Todd Viney!
Oh, that is no
That's
small
amazing.
Gift.
That's amazing!
And if you have a look where that poster is.
I'm going to photo.
Okay. Oh, gee, what a team. Well, of course, Jay Viney used to play.
Yeah. So Sandy's just turned to the page of all the pictures of all
the
players.
Oh, do you know who I used to love as well? Stephen Tingay.
Oh, who didn't? Stinger.
He was amazing, wasn't he?
Did you see on that social media site that we're all aware of, that game that Ox kicks 9 goals? There's Tingay is like, he's so young and Viney as well. They played so well. And Sean Charles in the middle just kept bombing
them. Oh, Sean Charles.
It was amazing.
Come on, you Melbourne guys.
Well, it was amazing for us. Maybe not for anyone else. Give us a smile, Sandy. Okay. All right.
God,
well,
pressure. Anything this is
else?
Amazing. What a find, Tim.
Found it. Found it in my storage.
Your archives.
My archives.
Yeah, this is incredible. You're living in surrounded by boxes of just footy stuff now, with one chair in the middle, just a field and a single light.
I'm
scribbling as hard as I can.
Yeah, it's all alphabetized or date order at least.
Yeah.
A second, that one was not there.
Now, Sandy, I'm not sure if you're aware of what your husband is doing for the end of each show, but he ends the show for us, but we're still trying to iron out how we're going to do this.
So, okay.
So the first episode, he played recorder.
Yes.
Second episode, he played us a song on guitar. And the last episode...
I missed the last one.
The last episode, you missed out. He rapped.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that.
I have nothing prepared this time. Well, I never had anything prepared last time. I literally have nothing.
I remember in the
80s
having... Did you ever have those Melbourne cassette tapes? My older siblings had them. That's why we had them. But they'd release their own songs. Come on, demon.
Yeah. No, I do not remember this.
Yeah, classic. Yeah,
that
was
that
actual.
Fantastic.
Yeah, actual songs. Like, it was amazing.
I thought it was going to be like, like the times table CDs to help you memorize the players and their stats.
No, no, it was literally
I get around that.
All pop songs.
Pop songs that they've done by the players.
And there was if you YouTube it, I think there's a clip on YouTube of a film clip they did with players like dancing. Yeah. It's incredible.
Doesn't that happen anymore?
No, I really should. Yeah. Really should.
I feel like this could be the sign off chatting about that. Now, did you not have your own little radio show when you were a kid? Now, everyone probably did this. In the shed, they had
a little
tape recorder where they might go and make stuff. Now, I can't remember the name of the show, but was that footy related as well?
Oh, no, I think it's a bit of everything.
Well, okay, cool.
But
can we find audio of that?
We can try and track it down.
Oh, yes, please.
And, of course, there used to be Demon Radio in the late 90s and early 2000s. Mm. Yeah. Every Sunday night between 7 and 8 p.m., Demon Radio could ring up. Jamie Shanahan was often a... what was his name? Shanahan?
Jamie Shanahan, yeah.
Yeah, was often a...
The compere?
Yeah, it was a co-host and it was like great. They'd have a different
radio
play
now.
On. Oh, it is, absolutely.
We sit in the corner, you guys can just chat.
That was a great show.
And it wasn't after that you started up with the Rave page and you did some writing for the local rag?
It's not my show, mate.
There we go, that's our sign-up for today. A little bit of...
Come on, demons.
Well,
I can be the song.
Fitting.
Well, 1900. Okay, sing the demon song if you want. They won.
Yeah. Oh dear. All right. You don't have to.
Yeah, you do
me.
It.
Yeah,
do
yeah,
it.
It's, no, better not. Come on, we've had enough.
All become a little bit one-eyed.
Yeah. Yes. Poor Tim.
Yeah.
Well, Collingwood.
Yeah, Essendon and Collingwood building. So we got to enjoy it while it lasts. And I think St Kilda feature in at least one grand final. I think I read something very briefly.
Oh, within the next 20 years, I think they do. Yes.
Yeah, but they don't win it.
Nah. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler. I think anyone would know that. But yes.
And I should note, we've got through a whole episode without Kaz saying,
Can I edit that out? Well done.
Thank you. Kaz. Thank you. I actually did slip it in there somewhere in the beginning. Maybe it was over something else that we didn't put to air. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, those of you who are still listening.
Hooroo.
Hooroo. You can contact Kick to Kick on email at kicktokickpodcast@gmail.com or add us on Instagram, which is @kicktokick_podcast. Or find us on Twitter, which is @kicktokickpod. And thanks for listening.